Well, today as we continue our two-month study in the life of David, the second king of Israel, would you open up your Bibles with me to the Old Testament book of 1 Samuel. We're going to be in 1 Samuel 25. If you need a Bible, our ushers are coming forward right now, and they'd love to hand you one. We're going to be in 1 Samuel 25 in just a moment. You know, one of the challenges of learning to walk in obedience to God is that the learning process is not just a one-time act. It's not just a one-time act of hearing what God desires for us or reading what God desires for us and then just declaring, okay, I got it. It's not even the one-time act of obeying God and then after that one-time act of saying, okay, I'm good, I've arrived. Learning to walk in obedience to God is a lifetime process of continuing to live lives faithfully before God so that our hearts and our minds are being transformed day by day, moment by moment, so they reflect more and more the heart and desires and the will of the Father. But what makes this ongoing lifetime process of learning to obey sometimes incredibly challenging is that there is often pain associated with this process. It will involve the pain of God allowing trials and suffering into our life in order that we may reveal the obedience in our life. It may involve the pain that we bring as we go through seasons of not obeying God and experiencing the consequences of that disobedience. It will involve the pain of discipline that God will graciously use in our life as He brings us back to a place of obedience. You know, as believers in Jesus Christ, learning to walk in obedience to God is a lifetime process of continuing to surrender our lives to God in all things and in all circumstances. You know, as we study the life of David, one of the things that is quickly evident in his life is God's ongoing work in his life. Is God is teaching David what it really looks like, what it truly looks like to walk in obedience. And in this ongoing process, we see David experience much pain, much sorrow. We see him going through many trials. Some of this pain is the pain that God allows so that David's obedient before God is revealed. Some of this pain is simply David's foolish disobedience and the consequences of not walking in obedience to God. Last week, we looked at 1 Samuel 24, where David was given the opportunity to walk in obedience to God and to not seek revenge where he had been treated unfairly. And it was an incredibly difficult lesson to learn because in David's obedience before God, he had to humble himself before King Saul, the very man who was trying to unjustly kill him. But just because David was obedient in chapter 24, didn't mean that the learning process was now over for David. It didn't mean that David could now declare himself a finished product before God because he wasn't. God was still going to use the fire of injustice in his ongoing process to teach David what it really looks like to walk in continual obedience before God. You see, God was going to continue to allow trials in David's life so that he would have an opportunity, a continued opportunity for his faith to be proved genuine, for him to have continued opportunities for his obedience to be revealed. God will continue to do that in your life. God will continue to allow you to walk through fires of difficulty and pain in order that your faith may be proved genuine, that your obedience may shine to everyone around you. And so today, as we look at 1 Samuel 25, we're going to see David in a very similar situation that he was last week when we looked at Samuel 24. We're going to see him in a very similar situation, and he wants to take revenge on someone. David's going to have to learn once again what it means to fully and completely trust God. And as we look at this passage, as we look at this familiar situation that David is going to find himself in again, I want us to be reminded that God is in the process right now in your life of conforming your heart to His. That He is in the process of teaching you, He is in the process of teaching me to walk in obedience to Him. And that process is not just a one-time act, but it is an ongoing process. And in this process, may we not resent the process. May we not become bitter toward the process, but may we see it as God transforming us into the very image of His Son. And so would you read with me 1 Samuel 25, beginning in verse 1. Now Samuel, this is the prophet Samuel, who ministered and spiritually led Israel for many years. Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him in his house at Ramah. Chapter 25 begins with the death of Samuel, and this is significant for our passage today because it gives us into a glimpse into where David may be emotionally. His primary ally has died. I mean, the one person who really understood that David is the one who has been anointed the future king of Israel, he's no longer around. The one person that could speak into Saul's life, the one person that could rebuke him, the one person that essentially had spiritual authority, if you will, over Saul, he's now died. I'm sure David has a sense of feeling alone as Saul is in the process of trying to hunt David down. David's in the place of, God, what are you doing here? How is the one guy that has as an ally here? At this point in David's life, he has about 600 men that are with him. As David is out fighting the battles for Israel, and as he's actually also fleeing the wrath of King Saul. So continue with me in verse 2. And David rose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. And there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now, the name of the man was Nabal, and his wife, and the name of his wife is Abigail. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. He was a Calebite. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep. So David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, go to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. And thus you shall greet him, peace be to you, and peace be to your house, and peace be to all that you have. I hear that you have shearers. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm, and they missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we have come on a feast day. Please give whatever you have at hand to your servants and to your son David. And so David and his men were in a region called Paran, and while they were in this area, they came in contact with some shepherds that were taking care of a large amount of sheep. And so while David and his men were also in this area, they provided protection for these shepherds. They provided protection for these sheep. And David was certainly someone who understood the dangers and the hazards of being a shepherd. He certainly understood the hazards of protecting sheep from animals or other people that just want to come and take them. Now David's motivation here wasn't simply just to provide protection, but it was probably also an opportunity to provide for his own men. Because David knew at some point that they were going to shear the sheep, And the sheep shearing season often ended with a time of festivity, that the owner of the sheep would throw a big feast, and he would invite all his men who had been doing the shearing and taking care of the sheep, and it was a time of great festivity. It was a time which people were very generous, giving what they had to others. And so David, needing to provide for his 600 men, saw this as an opportunity for Nabal, a man who was incredibly wealthy, to return kindness to David after David had been kind to his men and his flock by protecting them. He's hoping that he would return his kindness with some food. Would you just give us whatever you have? And so David very humbly asked Nabal, hey, whatever you would have, could you provide for my men? Could you provide for me? David's request is done out of graciousness, out of humility. And so here's Nabal's response. Verse 9. When David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal in the name of David, and then they waited. And Nabal answered David's servants, who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shears and give it to men who have come from I don't know where? It's not just a no. This is a insulting no. This is a slap in the face no. Well, when David asks, who is David? Nabal knows who David is. At this point, everyone in Israel knew who David was. In fact, later in this passage, we're going to see that Nabal's wife Abigail clearly knew who David was. When Nabal says, who is David, it's more of a statement of insult. It's more of a, who do you think you are? Did you think I should be impressed about who you are? Do you think you are someone of importance that I should give you my food? In fact, Nabal says, I think you're a traitor. I think you have betrayed your master. When Nabal makes the statement, there are many servants these days that are breaking away from their masters. I mean, he's revealing. He knows who David is. He's saying he believes David has betrayed King Saul and that he's trying to look for, make a name for himself and undermine the authority and the position of King Saul. I mean, it is a direct slight against the character and the motive of David. This is Nabal basically dismissing David, saying, I don't feed disloyal people. I know who King Saul is. I don't know who you are. And so verse 12 says, so David's young men turned away and came back and told him all of this. And David said to his men, every man strap on his sword. And every man of them strapped on his sword. David also strapped on his sword. And about 400 men went up after David, while 200 remained with the baggage. David's reaction to Nabal is that David emotionally loses it. I mean, he goes from zero to furious in 2.7 seconds. And David's response is quick and decisive. Every man, strap on your sword. I mean, it just sounds like a classic line you hear from some epic, you know, gladiator movie. Men, we're moving. And we're just not moving to fight. We are moving to kill, to destroy, to annihilate. We know this is the motive of David for what he says in verses 21 through 22. Chapter 5, 21 through 22, it says, now David had said, surely in vain have I guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has returned me evil for good. God so do to the enemies of David, and more also, if by morning I leave as much as one male of all who belong to him. David wasn't going to talk. David was going to wipe out. David is going to take revenge on this man who had insulted him. David is going to take revenge on a man who returned God's kindness with a spit in his face. You know, it's interesting that in the previous chapter, we see a great example of David walking in obedience by not taking matters into his own hands and letting God avenge what God desires to avenge. He allowed God to take care of the injustice in his life. In chapter 24, we see David willing to humble himself before God. But now we come to chapter 25, and we don't necessarily know the time frame between when he spared Saul's life and this moment of being insulted. It was probably more than a few days, probably more than a few weeks, but it was probably, you know, a couple months. And as we saw in the previous chapter, and as we've seen in David's life up to this point, this is a man who is desiring to walk in obedience to God. But something happens here in 25. Something happens in his life that just sets him off. An insult from a foolish man. After David had protected his men, protected his sheep, and he loses it. And he gets overcome by anger. You know, I think every single one of us can relate to what David just experienced, what David just felt, and at some level, how David responded. You're trying to walk in obedience to God, and there's just something in your life that causes you to lose it. You're wanting to live your life in a way that reflects the heart and character of God, and then one morning you're driving in traffic and someone just cuts you off and there's an anger that fills up in you and you respond in a way that you should not have responded. You're trying to be a witness at work and you're trying to be a testimony, and something happens in which you are insulted and the words come out of your mouth quicker than you can even catch them, and they're cold and they're harsh and they're unloving. And you can find yourself after the fact saying, how did I stumble so quickly? You know, walking in obedience to God is not just a one-time act that happened years ago, but it requires us walking daily through the fires of trial, time and time again, surrendering our lives before God, time and time again. You know, what David's life shows us is that learning to obey is the ongoing act of depending on God moment by moment. British pastor Alan Redpath, when observing David's ungodly response, says this about his own life: does it not show beyond all possible doubt that I cannot stand against the enemy of my soul unless the Lord upholds me moment by moment? This story tells me that however long I have been on the Christian path, however often I have been overcome one temptation or another, however many times I have defeated sin in one area, it can strike in another and crush me in a moment. Every day, every moment, we have opportunities to learn what it means to walk in obedience to God. This is why Jesus invites us to be in a relationship with Him, to follow Him. He says, you got to take up your cross, meaning lay down your life daily. And I think just like with the situation with Saul in chapter 24, God is allowing David to be tested. He's allowing him to enter into this fire of injustice. Because where's David right now? David's in a season of preparation. He's in a situation, he's in a season of being prepared to be king of Israel. And David is going through the fire of preparation as his character is being tested. When David becomes king, is he going to depend on God and God alone? Or is he simply going to be the man who takes things into his own hands, into his own understanding, into his own ability? Is he just going to respond out of his own human will, out of his own human pride, out of his own human emotion? Is he going to be quick to say, strap on your men, strap on your swords, men? Or is he going to be a man quick to say, I need you here, God. I need you once again. Walking in obedience to God is us daily taking up our cross. You may be in that season right now. A season in which you find yourself experiencing the same type of trial over and over and over again. And it almost feels like God's taking a spotlight on your weakness. And he's shining it there day after day after day. You know, instead of shaking our fist and saying, God, why are you allowing the same thing to happen day after day after day? It's an opportunity for us to once again come before God dependent, saying, I need you day after day after day. Father, show me what it means to be obedient to you in the same place day after day after day. See, he gives you opportunities not to strap on the sword. He gives you opportunities to surrender. To surrender to his will and to his desires. In this moment when David has responded in an inappropriate and selfish and an ungodly manner, God's going to do something wonderful for David. And God is going to bring an unexpected woman into his life that is going to allow David to see that he has been acting in a way that does not please God. And in this conversation between David and this woman, we're going to have an opportunity to see how we should respond when we find ourselves living in the flesh and it once again taking a hold of us. Read with me starting in verse 14. I'm actually going to read all the way to verse 31. So you can either read with me, or if you just want to sit there, close your eyes, and let me read as this passage unfolds. But one of the young men, this is one of the servants of Nabal, one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them. Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm, and we did not miss anything when we were in the fields, as long as we went with them. They were a wall to us both night and day, all the while we were with them, keeping the sheep. Now therefore know this and consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his house, and he is such a worthless man that one cannot speak to him. Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine and 5 sheep already prepared and 5 seas of parched grain and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on the donkeys. And she said to her young men, go on before me. Behold, I come after you. But she did not tell her husband Nabal. And as she rode on the donkey and came down under cover of the mountain, behold, David and his men came down toward her and she met them. Skip ahead to verse 23. When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, on me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not my Lord regard this worthless fellow Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from the blood guilt and from saving with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek do evil to my Lord be as Nabal. And now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your servant. For the Lord will certainly make your Lord a sure house, because the Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord, and evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. If men rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living and the care of the Lord your God. And the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the hollow of a sling. And when the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel, This is where Abigail understands who David is. My Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause, or for my Lord working salvation himself. And when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your servant. You know, when people teach this passage, often the focus of this passage is the actions of Abigail. And she does respond with great wisdom. She responds with good judgment and sensitivity to the Lord. And her life here is definitely worthy of examining and learning from. There's much to spend time with when it comes to Abigail. But for our purposes today, I'm wanting to look at David's angry response to Nabal. And then as we're going to see now, David's response to Abigail. But here's what I want us to understand about Abigail. And here's what I want to say about Abigail. Her actions and her words are God's grace to David. Her actions and her words are God's grace in David's life, revealing the wickedness in his own life. She's used to keep him from the destructive consequences of his own selfish anger. And we're going to talk about how God uses people like Abigail in our own life. And so let's look at David's response from Abigail in verse 32. And David said to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me." David's response is recognized, this is of God. This is God's doing. This woman is God's grace in his life. You know, oftentimes when our sin is pointed out, our first response isn't to thank God. Our first response is probably to get angry. Our first response is get defensive. And it's the character of David that we see here in his willingness to be convicted by God. The character of God that we see here is his willingness to hear God's voice, even in this stranger's voice. And then to praise God for what he is doing in his own life by opening his eyes to his own wickedness. And then he thanks Abigail. Read with me in verse 33. "Blessed be your discretion, and blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand. For as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, truly by morning there had not been left to Nabal so much as one male." And David received from her hand what she had brought him, and he said to her, "Go up in peace to your house. See, I have obeyed your voice, and I have granted your petition." David praises her. So your translation may say, "May be blessed for your good judgment." Your translation may say, "Thank you for your good sense." David is thanking her for having the good judgment to seek out peace in a situation that could have quickly become violent. He says, You kept him from blood guilt. I mean, you kept me from murdering innocent people. You kept me from becoming a murderer and trying to take things into my own hands. See, through the humility of Abigail, David was able to see the sinfulness of his own heart. When we allow ourselves to become overcome by our own selfishness, sometimes God will bring people into our lives to speak into our lives so that we may see our own sinfulness. And they may come into our lives with the gentleness and the graciousness and the humility of Abigail. They may come into our lives with a strong rebuke, as we're going to see in a couple of weeks in the life of David. But God often brings people into our life to bring wisdom and counsel and correction and even rebuke so that we don't give in to our own selfishness, our own anger, our own pride, our own sin. That he gives us those opportunities to stop. He gives us those opportunities to say, "Whoa, wait a minute, what I'm doing does not please you, God." He gives us those opportunities to turn and to repent. But the challenge for every single one of us in here is, are we willing to listen to those voices? Are we willing to listen to those people that God brings into our life? And I think many times people come into our lives and they speak truth into our lives and we just don't want to hear it. I mean, we become so consumed in our own hatred, in our own bitterness, in our own pain, that when people speak into our lives, we dismiss it, not realizing that this was God's very grace and mercy on our lives, turning us from sin that was going to bring much destruction and pain into our lives. Now for David, this voice came from a stranger. I think oftentimes in our lives, the voice comes from people we know. A parent, spouse, a brother, a sister, a neighbor, a friend, a spiritual leader. I think one of the most difficult things in our life is to be able to lay down our own pride and to be able to listen. It doesn't mean that every voice that's spoken into our life comes from God, but are we willing to take those voices and evaluate them before God? Are we willing to take voices that we go, I can't believe they just said that, and come before God and say, God, are you trying to speak to me? Are you trying to bring grace to me? You know, just like with the situation with Saul, it took great humility for David to walk in obedience to God, because it required David not responding to Nabal's insults. You know, in his human mind, David could find himself saying, well, I guess Nabal just got away with it. I mean, he knows that he can slap me down and I won't do anything. I just lost a position of strength here. And he's going to be able to tell all of his friends that he insulted the great David and David did nothing. I imagine those things are going through David's mind. You know why? Because those things go through our mind. When we're insulted, when we're attacked, and all we want to do is seek revenge. And we think, if I don't, they get away with it. But God is the God of justice. It's for him to avenge. That's not our role. Our job, our role, our response is found in Romans chapter 12, beginning in verse 17. The Apostle Paul writes, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends. But leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge. I'll repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. See, it's in those times of feeling persecuted, insulted, that we have an opportunity to live out the gospel in our lives. We have no idea how God is going to use our response of graciousness and goodness to change the very heart that has been insulting us. You know, if David had destroyed Nabal and all the men of his household, and by the way, these are fellow countrymen, who knows the devastating consequences it would have had on David's ability to rule. He may have always ruled with a divided kingdom. David could have lived with these lifelong consequences simply because his human pride was insulted. But instead, God chose the grace of God to overcome evil with good. The rest of the passage, we see that God is a God of justice. And in this passage, he chose to bring justice to the one who insulted David. You can read the conclusion of the story in your own time. You may be in a place right now where it feels like you fall into that same trial every moment, every day. It could be God's grace leading you to a place of obedience before him, of taking this area of your life that you have been holding on to and just be willing to say, I can't, God. But would you fill it with your grace and your mercy? God, would you help me to stop strapping on the sword and just surrender to you and say, I can't, but you can. I'm going to invite our worship team to come back up here. And as we conclude in this time, please let this be your response to God. What is it that God is placing upon your heart of surrender to him right now? what trial in your life, what person who has offended you, what area that just feels like it comes time and time again in which you say, I'm taking off the sword and I'm surrendering my will and my desires to you, God.